So I have a pet peeve. I have a lot of pet peeves. But here's one of my pet peeves. Calling people in the Bible, Bible characters. That's always bugged me. See, it implies a fictional-like persona. And if you believe that the Bible is a documentation of actual events that happened here on this earth, then you have to believe that these people were real people with real lives and real stories. They're people with faults and flaws who struggle with many of the same things that we also struggle with. They were a product of their time and their culture, but they also existed in the brokenness of the world, just like we do. They didn't always get it right. See, I don't believe that it is disrespectful to look at the stories of the people of the Bible and to see them for more than just the heroes that they've come to be portrayed. You know, in the flannel graph lessons that we learned about in Sunday school, or the cute little kids videos that tells the good things of how, you know, Noah's Ark is this amazing thing when it's really the most horrific story in history of all time. See, I feel that it's actually honoring to who they were as people to be able to recognize them holistically, not just as the part that we want to see. They were real people that were struggling to live in a broken world with faith. And isn't that where we are? We're just trying to live in this broken world and live by faith. See, reducing them to the level of fictional characters like you would if you learn lessons from like Aesop's fables or like a fairy tale. See, I feel like that's what's disrespectful. But that's enough of my soapbox speech. So none of you guys are gonna like use the word character around me again, are you? No. Making you all nervous. So okay, that's enough of that. Let's talk about Moses. See, Moses is probably one of the best known people from the Bible. He's credited for writing the first five books of the Old Testament, which is called what? The Torah. You guys are smart. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. His story is recorded. We get his whole story from his birth to his death. There's not many people of the Bible that we have that much information on, except for maybe Jesus. See, Moses has a really big highlight reel. And it was a lot to try to figure out what do we talk about with Moses, because he has a lot of highlights. See, he's known for big moments like the 10 plagues of Egypt, or leading the Hebrew slaves to freedom, splitting the Red Sea wide open, carrying the 10 commandments down from the mountain, and leading the Israelites in the desert for 40 years. But the highlight reels, they only show the victories, not the struggles, not the day-to-day, not the moments of questioning. See, through all of these big moments, Moses battled self-doubt and the pressure of leadership. And if we ignore what happened behind the scenes, then we miss out on understanding how God can work through our flaws. It's important to recognize that he wasn't this larger-than-life person that only did the good. He had moments of doubt. In Exodus 3, God spoke to Moses through a burning bush. Now, that's just wild on its own. Like, there's this bush, and it's on fire, but it's not being consumed by the flames. It's not actually burning. See, God had heard the cries of his people that were living in slavery in Egypt, and he was going to send Moses to deliver them out. In Exodus 3, starting with verse 11, said, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?' And God said, 'I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain.'" Spoiler, that happened. Does anyone else really like relate to this moment? Like, I know I do. Like, you've got this powerful moment, And you would think that standing in front of a bush that's not on fire and hearing a voice come out of it would be enough to make you go like, I'm going to believe anything at this point. Like, you say go, I'm going to go. But looking at this bush, like picture Moses standing there barefoot because God told him to take his shoes off because he's on holy ground. And there's this voice coming out of this bush. And he says, who am I? Like, who am I that I can go and do this thing that you're telling me to do? Like, God says, I'm sending you. And our natural response to that is, why me? See, Moses asked God, who am I? And I know I completely relate to this moment, that feeling of being inadequate when you're called to do something that is so massively uncomfortable and difficult. It'd be a whole lot easier to just, you know, have walked right on past the bush, ignore the call. But God said, I've got you. Like, I'm going with you, and I'm going to give you what you need when you need it. But see, Moses still wasn't convinced. In Exodus 4, verse 1, Moses answered, what if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. See, Moses was a shepherd, and a shepherd doesn't go without their staff. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it, as one does. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. Now that's a faith moment right there, I'm just saying. So Moses reached out and he took hold of the snake and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside of your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become white as snow. Now put it back in your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Now, let's just pause here for a moment. Like, there's some wacky things happening here. Like, he's taking orders from a flaming bush, and his stick turns to a snake, and then his hand's diseased. Like, we're missing the reaction point here. Like, what was really happening on, like, I mean, I'm glad it said that he ran from the snake. Like, that gives him a little bit of humanity right there. Like, as he's experiencing these completely wild and unprecedented things, like, put yourself in his shoes. Well, he wasn't wearing shoes. Put yourself in his footsteps. What was he thinking? Like, what was going on? Like, you pull your hand out of your cloak and you have leprosy? Like, that, you can't ignore that. And then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. I'd believe that. I would believe that was possible at that point. But see, at this point, I feel like God has made it pretty clear that he is powerful enough to sustain Moses through anything that he calls him to do. See, his voice is coming through a fire-covered bush that's not actually burning. The stick in Moses' hand becomes a snake and then a stick again. Moses' own hand becomes cursed and then immediately cured when Moses did what he was told to do. And God told him that there would be more signs if needed. But still, Moses has doubts. He fears being rejected. He says, Moses says to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? This is like a Job kind of moment where God's just like, who created the stars? Were you there? Were you there? Consider the Levite. Anyways, that's a whole other tangent. We're not going to get on to that. I love Job. Read Job. Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Have you ever said something to someone like over and over again and they still just want to argue with you? They want to give you excuses as to why like you're wrong or they just can't do. Like parents, you tell your kids to clean their rooms and then they just keep having excuses why they can't do it, and then they just can't do it by themselves, and then they just need some help, and then they just can't. They're too tired. Their foot hurts. And then they actually get to the point to where, like you had patience at the beginning and stuff, and then they look at you with their precious little face, and they say, can't you just do it? Now, I can understand why this next line is here when I think about it like that. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. And he said, what about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak, and I will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. So God's meeting him where he's at. So he keeps coming back to God with doubt, with excuses. Finally, he's just like, can't you just send someone else? And God's like, no, no. You have been chosen since birth to carry out this purpose. But I want to send someone with you because you don't believe you can do it on your own. You don't believe that I'm going to sustain you enough. So yeah, I'll send someone with you. See, Moses made excuses because he felt inadequate for the job that God was telling him to do. And that's a pretty natural response. I believe that that's a pretty human response. See, we're all inadequate on our own. But God wasn't asking Moses to work alone. God said, I will go with you. I will give you the words to say, and I will teach you what to do. I will equip you. I will be beside you. I will be leading you and guiding you and making sure that you never feel alone in the mission. And then if that still isn't enough, I'll send your brother with you. I'll give you someone else to go with you. See, God was offering Moses all the resources and the support that he would need. And when we read the story of Moses from beginning to end, it's easy for us now to see how God chose him and preserved him and prepared him and equipped him to go on this mission. See, we know that God protected a little baby, a helpless baby that was floating down a dangerous river past hippos and crocodiles in a basket. I just want to know what that basket was made of, that it floated and didn't just sink. See, that basket just happened to float right to the only person who could keep him safe from Pharaoh's decree to kill all of the male babies. Floated right to Pharaoh's daughter, to his own palace. And God softened Moses' heart as an adult who was raised in the Pharaoh's palace. Then as an adult, God softened his heart toward the slaves, even though he did not relate to them. He was not in slavery with them. See, God provided for Moses in the desert when he fled from Egypt as an exile after standing up for the slaves. When he had to leave his home, God sustained him in the desert and led him to a well where he met who would become his wife and become a family. He started a family and become a shepherd and then just happened to lead him right to the base of a mountain that has a bush that's on fire that's not burning. See, Moses allowed his self-doubt to prevent him from immediately believing that God would use him to accomplish something incredible. But he didn't let it stop him completely. See, eventually, he did the right thing. See, here's the truth. Moses was not wrong when he said that he was inadequate. See, on his own, he would not be able to deliver his people out of slavery. But that was never the point. He was never supposed to do it on his own. See, God wasn't asking Moses to be enough or to do it by himself. God was asking Moses to be willing. He was asking Moses to trust him enough to just take the step and trust that he was going to be there with him. To trust that God is enough, even when we aren't. See, every one of us has a calling from God. And I don't think that any of you have ever gotten that calling directly from a burning bush. I could be wrong, but that doesn't make it less real. That doesn't make it less direct. See, God isn't asking any of us to deliver thousands of people out of literal slavery, but he is asking us to share the path to spiritual freedom in the world. And it looks different for everyone. It might look like raising a family, raising kids, raising the next generation to know Jesus. It might look like serving or loving someone that's different than you, that has needs that you can help meet. It could mean being a light in the darkness at your job or in your school. It could mean forgiving someone that's hurt you. It could mean stepping into a new ministry or a new job, taking on a new responsibility that you don't feel qualified for. Or it could just be showing others who God is by reflecting his character in your life, in your works, and in your actions. See, like Moses, our first instinct is to ask God, who am I? Who am I? It's easy for us to have excuses, legitimate reasons. We're not qualified. We're too busy. We can't take on something else. It's easy to ask him, please send someone else. I can't do this. But God's response to us is the same as what he said to Moses. He's saying, I'll be with you. You're not doing it alone. You're right. You're not enough unless I meet you there. See, after Jesus resurrected from the dead, he spent time with his disciples. And before he ascended into heaven, he left them with one final commission. Matthew 28, verse 16. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. See, even after all that these men had seen, being in ministry with Jesus, watching him die, spending time with him after he came back to life, some still doubted. Don't miss that. We tend to look at the commission and we gloss over the fact that there was still doubt. Still, Jesus promised to be with them always. See, Moses doubted himself, but God never doubted his plan. And the same God who took an insecure, excuse-making shepherd and turned him into a deliverer, the same God who took 11 flawed men, and if you don't believe that the disciples were flawed, you're not reading the Gospels real close. They took 11 flawed men and who followed Jesus and then turned them into the apostles who initiated the spread of the gospel throughout the entire world. And that same God is wanting to take your life, your ordinary life, and shape you and lead you and guide you and sustain you to do extraordinary things. See, the real highlight reel of your life, it's not going to be those moments where you nailed everything perfectly. The trophies turn to rust. The glory fades. The next thing always comes. Has anyone seen the musical Newsies? It's great. There's this great line in one of the songs, and it's talking about like how today's like headlines become like, you wrap, I can't remember the exact line, but like become the wrapping for, you know, tomorrow's fish. Highlights fade. See, what's really going to matter in your life, it's going to be those moments when you trusted God to shine through the cracks of your brokenness. Those moments when you stood strong despite your weakness. The times when you stepped out of your comfort zone even though you felt unqualified. It's those moments when you believed that his steady faithfulness was greater than your self-doubt. See, God's calling every one of us to do something for his kingdom, but he doesn't expect you to do it on your own. And he doesn't need you to be perfect. He just needs you to be willing. It's been a trying week. And I feel like I would be remiss not to address things. We don't get into a whole lot, but this is family here, so we're going to have a little family conversation. Social media is ugly. This week's been bad. And it doesn't matter where you land on things. You're either fanning the flame or you're extinguishing it. See, the thing is it doesn't matter. What matters is love. It doesn't matter political affiliation, denominational affiliation. It's all going to fade away. What matters is God's kingdom. See, and we all have a calling to be something more than what we see in the world. See, it's not about saying the right things or standing up for one side or the other. See, the thing is you got to consider, are you spreading love or hate? Because I'll tell you, I don't get very political. And I guarantee there's not anyone in this room that actually knows where I stand on most things. And some people get mad about it. Mike has yelled at me before. But see, I believe that the same thing that I tell my class, I'm going to tell you guys. See, I teach ethics, religions, and culture at U of O. And I said this to my class this week, and I'm going to say it here. It is not my job to tell you how to believe or what to believe. It's my job to get you to search and question and sort out your own convictions. It's not my job to tell you mine, because it doesn't matter. See, I've worked hard for my beliefs and my convictions. I think you should work hard for yours. So when you look out in the world, when you scroll on social media, what narrative are you feeding? Are you feeding love or are you feeding hate? Unity or division? Which one's building the kingdom? See, we all have opinions, and we all feel strongly about things. But ultimately, whose kingdom are we really interested in building? Because I'll tell you that the problems of this world are never going to be fixed with laws. It's never going to be fixed by a political party. It's never going to be fixed by a perfect denomination that gets everything right. It's going to be fixed by ordinary people showing extraordinary love. The problems of this world are not policies. It doesn't help. Some make it worse. Some make it harder. But the problem is the brokenness of humanity. So when you hear a message like this, where you're being encouraged to go and do, because we're all responding to a call, because every single person has a call, I don't want you to leave here and think that that means that you have to do some form of ministry in your life, or you have to make some big sacrifice or move across the world, or it's as simple as showing love in the face of brokenness. That's our call. That's our mission. When Jesus told his disciples to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them, he didn't say, go and build kingdoms. He didn't tell them to go and spread ideas and ideals. He said, go, love, teach, build relationships with people. You know, I tend to, you know, watch too many movies. But I feel like stories are powerful and they can be relatable. And I woke up this morning and I haven't seen the movie Pocahontas in a really, really long time. But I woke up this morning with one part of the song Colors of the Wind stuck in my head. And it was cycling in my head the whole time I was getting ready this morning. And I don't know if I'm supposed to share this with you guys or not, but there's a line in it that says, we think the only people who are people are the people who look and think like you. But if you walk the footsteps of a stranger, you'll learn things you never knew, you never knew. And I want you guys to think about this week. Because right now, it's very easy to divide. But I want you to think about who do you have relationship with who don't look and think like you? We're going to do another song. And during this song, it's not a stand and worship kind of song. If you want to, if you feel led to, then that's fine. But I want you guys to reflect. I want you guys to set aside this time to think. Because I don't think that we often take time to just stop and think. We fill the gaps of our lives by scrolling or distracting ourselves, constantly seeking that next form of entertainment. So I want to take some time to think. I want you to consider that question of who do you have relationship in your life with that don't look and think like you? Who do you love that you disagree with? And if you don't, how can you? How can you get there? How can you genuinely love someone, not with the idea of, I'm going to build a relationship with this person so they become like me, so they think like me, so they believe like me. I'm going to change their mind. Who do you love for being who they are? See, we have lots of reasons to try to establish hate against people because of the highlight reel that we see in their lives on social media, because of the highlight reels that we see in their lives. But are we willing to look past other people's highlight reels and consider, what are they dealing with? Are they struggling with doubt? Are they struggling with fear? So I want you guys to take some time. Try to remove distraction from your mind. Where do you feel God leading you to go? Who do you feel God leading you to go to? How can you reflect his life through the cracks of this broken world? Do you feel inadequate to respond to what God's calling you to do? And how can you actively trust God to fill that gap?